I'm ISS's Global Head of Research, Georgina Marshall, and welcome to this podcast, which is the second instalment of our 2022 Bulletin Season Insights series. In this April edition, we'll provide updates on the progress of the main Americas, European, and Asia-Pacific AGM seasons, taking a look at season volumes and emerging trends so far, meeting logistics, and some upcoming key meetings to watch. Let me introduce you to today's presenters. For the Americas, you'll hear from Shebano Kahn, a senior analyst in our Canadian research team based in Toronto, US research head Mark Goldstein, and a senior member of the US compensation research team, Rachel Hedrick, also join us today. Europe will be covered by Carla Silva, who's a senior member of our UK research team in London, and first-time Bulletin participant Cyril Levavasseur from Paris, who is an analyst on our French research team. And finally, Warren Chen, our research head for Asia ex Japan, will give us an update from his home base in Singapore on the main Asia seasons in April and May. And we'll also close today's podcast with some highlights from the recently concluded Korea proxy season. With that, let me talk first with Shebano in Toronto. Welcome, Shebano. How is the 2021 Canadian proxy season shaping up at this point?
Thanks, Georgina. So we kicked off the Canadian proxy season with bank meetings and are starting to see some early vote results. There was an influx of shareholder proposals this proxy season, with 25 shareholder proposals making it on the agenda at Canada's big five banks. Climate-related shareholder proposals were filed at seven banks, including requests for the adoption of a say on climate vote, which appears to have gained traction among shareholder proposal sponsors in the Canadian market. Last year, Canada only saw one say on climate shareholder proposal at Canadian Pacific Railway, which was supported by management itself. This year, the proposal has been seen at six of the seven banks and received 21% vote support at Scotiabank, 21.6% vote support at RBC, and 24.3% vote support at CIBC. Investor views on say on climate appear mixed, and it will be interesting to see how the proposal fares at the other banks. This year also marks Canadian Pacific Railway's first advisory management say on climate vote, after the bank's management supported the shareholder proposal requesting say on climate submitted last year. Canadian Pacific's AGM will be held on April 27th. A similar annual climate advisory vote will also be voted on at Canadian National Railway's AGM on May 20th for the second consecutive year. In addition, a shareholder proposal on the circular economy filed by MÉDAC made it on the agenda for a second time in a row at two banks, Laurentian Bank of Canada and Royal Bank of Canada. The proposal requested that the banks report on loans granted in the last few years in support of the circular economy. According to MÉDAC, a circular economy incorporates the product's life cycle and sustainable resource management, which can be described using the three R's: reduce, recycle, and reuse. Last year, this proposal received 16.2% vote support at RBC and 12.3% vote support at Laurentian Bank. This year, at Laurentian's AGM, it received 14% vote support, while at RBC, it received 18.3% vote support. A new type of shareholder proposal for Canada made it on the ballot at Constellation Software, whose meeting will be held on May 5th. The proponent is requesting that the company report on racial diversity in the workplace. Similar proposals have been seen in the US, which Mark will touch on shortly, but this proposal is the first of its kind in the Canadian market. We have seen a large amount of shareholder proposals making it on the agenda this year, around 70 shareholder proposals that ISS is currently aware of for meeting dates between Feb 2nd and May 12th. However, a significant number of shareholder proposals were withdrawn, mostly due to negotiated settlements. We are currently aware of up to 55 withdrawn shareholder proposals at companies with meetings in the same timeframe.
Thanks, Shebano. Let me bring in Mark for the US now. Mark, what are some of the trends in the US market that you're seeing so far this season?
Well, one very interesting development is the increasing integration of environmental and social issues into contested director elections. So following Engine No. 1's successful proxy contest at ExxonMobil in 2021, a number of more traditional activists have been incorporating environmental and social issues into their campaigns in 2022. At the first of these, Legion Partners is urging shareholders to vote against the re-election of Guess Incorporated co-founders Paul and Maurice Marciano after multiple sexual assault and harassment allegations against Paul Marciano, to which Maurice, the former board chair, is said to have turned a blind eye. Guess's annual meeting will be held on April 22nd, and the proxy was filed a week ago, just 16 days before the meeting. The early meeting date left Legion no time to nominate its own slate, so it is instead running a vote no campaign, albeit with its own proxy card. Perhaps even more surprisingly, longtime activist Carl Icahn has emerged as a champion of animal welfare in his campaigns at McDonald's and Kroger. At McDonald's, despite only owning 200 shares, Icahn has nominated two directors, claiming that the company has failed to follow through on a pledge to stop buying pork from suppliers who use gestation crates for sows by 2022. As it turns out, Icahn himself was instrumental in getting the company to make the pledge back in 2012, although few people realized that at the time. McDonald's meeting will take place on May 26th, and it does look like it will be a proxy contest. At Kroger, where Icahn's stake is even smaller, he's again seeking two board seats, motivated by two issues. Again, the use of gestation crates in Kroger's supply chain for pork, but also what Icahn calls an unconscionable wage gap between the CEO and the median employee, which he believes is a major cause of poor worker morale. As of this time, the meeting date for Kroger has not yet been announced. Now, Icahn has frankly admitted that because of his small stakes in these two companies, he doesn't stand to gain financially from his efforts, and claims he is trying to address glaring injustices and cruelty toward those who are most defenseless. So it'll be interesting to see whether his efforts gain traction with the institutional investors who are the largest owners of both companies. Now, of course, Icahn hasn't completely abandoned his typical financial activism, and that's evidenced by his tender offer and proxy contest at Southwest Gas Holdings, where he's nominating a full slate of 10 directors at the May 12th meeting.
And Carl Icahn is certainly keeping busy this year, Mark. Thank you. And turning back to ENS issues first, what other developments are there that you're seeing so far?
Well, whether or not many investors will support dissident directors based on concerns about animal welfare or pay equity, it's clear that a number of ENS-related shareholder proposals are continuing to win strong support, picking up right where they left off last year. Some of the notable vote results so far this year include Costco Wholesale, where a proposal seeking a report on GHG emissions reduction targets, including Scope 3, received 70% support. Apple, where proposals to have the company oversee and report a civil rights audit and report on concealment clauses, both received majority votes. Jack in the Box, where a call for a report on sustainable packaging efforts received a whopping 95.4% support. Walt Disney, which saw 59.6% support for a report on median and adjusted gender and racial pay gaps. And Maximus, where a racial equity audit proposal received 64.2% support. Although some boards have supported shareholder proposals on climate or civil rights matters in recent years, in each of the cases I just mentioned, the proposal was opposed by the board. Costco, Disney, and in one case for one of the proposals, Apple, all sought no action relief at the SEC, but either saw their attempts rejected or, in the case of Costco, withdrew the request.
So it looks like it will be another strong year for environmental and social related shareholder proposals and in the US. And April is, of course, a very busy month for US AGMs generally. So tell us about some of the high profile meetings that you think clients should have on their radar.
Well, let's start with the big banks. Bank of America, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo all hold their meetings on April 26th, followed by Goldman Sachs on the 28th. In addition to the perennial issues of executive compensation and calls for civil rights audits at banks that haven't already agreed to do so, the banks are coming under scrutiny by some investors over their financing of fossil fuel projects. Although the major banks have all made net zero commitments, they do continue to finance new fossil fuel development. Socially responsible and faith-based investors, along with the Sierra Club, have filed resolutions with these four banks, as well as JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley, who have meetings in May, asking for policies to align their lending and underwriting with net zero commitments to avoid financing new fossil fuel development. At the same time, the banks are facing pressure in the opposite direction from fossil fuel producing states like Texas, which are threatening to punish them for taking steps to cut off the industry. Pharmaceutical companies, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer, all have April 28th meetings and face proposals focused on equitable access to vaccines. Johnson & Johnson, which in fact has 9 ENS shareholder proposals on the ballot, also has proposals on mandatory arbitration, pay disparity, racial equity and civil rights, charitable contributions, lobbying alignment, and one asking it to discontinue sales of its talc-based baby powder. And I can't forget Berkshire Hathaway. It has an April 30th meeting where it's going to be facing 2 climate-related proposals, asking for more disclosure on its efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and a vote no campaign due to its alleged lack of progress and oversight in this area. Now, of course, there are a number of April meetings that are noteworthy due to executive compensation, which Rachel will tell you all about. So that's it for me today, Georgina.
Thanks, Mark. And now let's indeed turn to Rachel and executive compensation in the US. Rachel, are you seeing yet any recurring issues or themes around executive pay in this early part of the season?
Well, Georgina, we discussed the record failure rate and the lower support levels for 2021 say-on-pay proposals last year in our season kickoff webinar in March. And because of that issue, we were expecting to see more boards highlighting their engagement efforts in their 2022 proxy statements, as well as companies discussing changes they've made to their compensation programs that are intended to address that feedback from their shareholders. So thus far, that has been the case. We've seen an evaluated disclosure from several companies relating to actions that they've taken to address those low and failed 2021 votes. On this subject, investors may be interested to know that we've also seen at least one exempt solicitation filed that's raising concerns with the company's responsiveness to their failed 2021 say-on-pay vote. And that was at General Electric, whose annual meeting will be held on May 4th.
And what about the continued impact of COVID-19 on pay last year? Is that remaining a factor at this point in the 2022 season?
It is. And we discussed in our preseason report that significant say-on-pay opposition to those 2021 votes was more common amongst companies that made mid-cycle changes to their incentive programs or who took other unusual for a normal year compensation actions that were related to the pandemic. So we've seen some companies that after having those discussions over the summer and fall with their shareholders have either made commitments not to make additional adjustments or perhaps not to repeat special awards that were related to the pandemic. Many of those companies have incorporated some specific language into their proxy statements that we've seen that's indicated that they viewed the pandemic as an extraordinary circumstance and that they understand investor concerns related to their actions and that they plan to limit future adjustments to other extraordinary circumstances, obviously, which would be different from the COVID-19 pandemic. However, a few companies have taken a somewhat different approach and have made consecutive adjustments to their program. So, for example, after making discretionary changes to a bonus plan or an equity program, they've made another subsequent adjustment again to their 2021 pay.
That's interesting. Can you give any examples, Rachel, of perhaps an interesting meeting to watch on this issue?
Sure. So later this month, on April 25th, shareholders will be voting on the advisory compensation proposal at Honeywell, which is a large U.S. industrial company. So at Honeywell, in February of 2020, the executives received their normal annual cycle equity awards. And then, as everyone is well aware, the pandemic significantly disrupted the U.S. market shortly thereafter. So in early 2021, about a year after those grants were made, the board decided to adjust the performance-based portion of those equity grants just for the pandemic's effects on the company. And Honeywell's disclosure clearly stated this was a one-time adjustment. The compensation committee reduced the performance period for those awards from 3 years down to 2. And they also reduced the maximum opportunity that executives could potentially receive as upside potential from those grants. And these changes were disclosed prior to the company's 2021 annual meeting. And the advisory compensation proposal at that meeting received nearly 94% support, indicating that investors largely viewed that approach as reasonable. However, then in their 2022 proxy statement, Honeywell disclosed that in February of this year, they had made another adjustment to a different performance grant that was scheduled to vest at the end of fiscal 2021. And this adjustment didn't just change the forward-looking goals or how they'd be measured. This adjustment actually changed the underlying vesting of their performance awards. So it increased the number of shares that executives ultimately earned by about 61%. So while Honeywell didn't receive low support related to the first adjustment they made at last year's annual meeting, we will certainly be watching investors' tolerance for consecutive years of such adjustments, particularly when those actions may result in a large actual increase to the number of shares or awards that are actually earned.
Yes, thanks, Rachel. Honeywell definitely will be an interesting meeting to watch. Now let me quickly bring back Shibano into the discussion on compensation in Canada. Are you seeing any Canadian high profile meetings so far with pay related issues on their agendas?
Yes, Georgina. So we already saw this year's first failed say on pay vote at Enghouse Systems, with 63.5% of shareholders voting against the company's approach on executive compensation. And the say on pay resolution at Colliers International received 34% against votes from shareholders. Excluding votes of the nearly controlling shareholder, 68% of the remaining shareholders voted against the resolution. The company's compensation structure included an uncapped short-term incentive plan structure that resulted in a significant increase in CEO pay. We will be closely monitoring how compensation votes will play out through the rest of the season in Canada.
Thanks, Shimano. Now we're going to move to Europe. I'll first welcome Carla Silva, a senior member of our UK research team in London. Carla, when can we expect continental European and UK seasons to peak? I know you're going to be covering both areas for us today.
Thanks, Georgina. So April, and especially the second half of April, we generally see many European markets peak in their AGM seasons. Well, Turkish season was already completed in March, where we are currently seeing high volumes for the Nordics, Germanics, Italy, Benelux, and a number of Eastern European markets. Seasons for Spain, Poland, and Russia are generally expected in May or June. So in the UK, it is definitely safe to say that the AGM schedule has returned to pre-pandemic timings and that the UK peak season is in full swing. This week alone, close to 50 meetings will be covered. We expect the high volume to continue until the third week of May, and the second peak will continue in June.
Thanks, Carla, and a very busy couple of months still ahead in the UK and across Europe. So now that we're seeing many meetings coming through, what trends are you and our team seeing?
Well, in the UK, there is great interest in say on climate resolutions. The first company to put forward a say on climate resolution this year was Rio Tinto PLC. We recommended support for their climate action plan at their AGM, which was held on April 8th. At the time of this podcast, other companies seeking shareholder approval for say on climate resolutions include Anglo American PLC, which will have their AGM on April 19, the London Stock Exchange, which will have their AGM on April 27, NatWest Group, which will have their AGM on April 28, and Standard Chartered with its AGM on May 4. So say on climate resolutions put forward by management are becoming more common at banks and large GHG emitters like oil and mining companies, and follow similar proposals at 10 companies in the FTSE 350 last year. There are also companies like Glencore and Barclays who have previously sought and received approval for their climate action plans. This year, Glencore, whose AGM will be held on April 28th, is seeking shareholder approval for its climate progress report, while Barclays will seek shareholder approval for its approach to climate change in the round. The Barclays AGM will be held on May 4. There's also greater commitment from companies more broadly on climate change. We have seen a rise in companies that have integrated ESG metrics into their variable remuneration plans. Given the increased uptake of such metrics, it is important for targets to be quantifiable and that companies provide an appropriate level of disclosure, as well as clearly explaining the link between targets and company strategy.
Thanks, Carla. Let me now bring in Cyril from our French research team. What are you seeing in the French market on similar say on climate resolution, Cyril?
Thanks, Georgina. Indeed, there is a clear trend of more say on climate proposal in France this year. We've seen 9 short proposals at French companies so far this year compared to only 3 last year. Our focus is dual. First, we review whether the strategy and GHG reductions target are appropriate and stringent. Second, in terms of governance, we check whether companies have committed to a regular disclosure of progress made, and for some of them, what they disclose in their regular shareholder vote on the transition plan. To date, what the resolutions ask for are not yet consistent, and the market is not yet mature on these issues, as there is still neither legal framework in France nor clearly identified best practices surrounding these resolutions.
Thanks, Cyril. It will be an interesting season this year for climate change related resolutions and issues for sure. Let me come back to you again next, Carla. You touched on remuneration earlier. Are there any other themes to watch out for in the area of remuneration?
Yes, Regina. Well, I'll start with the UK first. The main theme of the UK season so far is the high level of bonus payouts this year. So far, we have seen many UK companies with significant increases on year-on-year bonus levels. Some of this may be expected as companies continue their recovery from the pandemic. However, it is also notable that many bonuses are paying out at near maximum levels, often at higher levels than pre-COVID, despite company performance not necessarily recovering to pre-COVID levels. One notable meeting coming up is the Weir Group AGM, which is scheduled for April 28th. The company has a restricted share plan under which a proportion of awards will start to vest after 2 years. The company granted awards in April 2020 when the company's share price was in a trough following the immediate impact of COVID-19 on the market. These awards will begin to vest in April of this year, leading to so-called windfall gains following a significant share price recovery. The company did include a provision to the 2020 restricted share awards whereby the remuneration committee will allow for a discretionary adjustment at the point of vesting if it is determined that a windfall gain has indeed occurred. The remuneration committee decided to reduce the 2020 awards by 15%. The voting on their pay report will help gauge shareholder views on the appropriateness of the proposed reduction and may provide an insight into how companies will approach this issue for long-term awards granted in 2020 and due to vest in 2023. And across the European continent, SRD2 has definitely changed the disclosure and voting landscape. Considering that practically all European companies now submit a remuneration report and or a remuneration policy for shareholder approval, this has increased scrutiny of remuneration practices across many countries. It's still early for a full view across so many varied markets, but we note so far that many boards are making discretionary adjustments to pay outcomes or award one-off special bonuses, whether it be for retention purposes, successful completion of transaction or IPOs, or to outright compensate for earlier downward adjusted pay in 2020.
Thanks, Carla. Cyril, have you identified any similar issues on pay at French companies?
Well, as you know, we've been closely tracking the impacts of the COVID-19 crisis on executive pay since the 2020 AGM season, and this year appears to be almost back to normal pre-pandemic levels. However, we're still noticing some lingering effects. Since the beginning of the 2022 French AGM season, we've observed similar issues on bonus outcomes as those outlined by Carla. Our attention is also particularly focused on adjustments to long-term incentive plans, particularly for heavily impacted sectors like travel, retail, or transportation. Some companies have excluded some branches of their activity from the calculation of their LTIP criteria. Some have even chosen to fully neutralize 2020 performance. A few companies have triggered payments of significant LTIP payouts thanks to revised performance objective, sometimes without prior shareholder approval, which seems to be designed to compensate for losses incurred by the executive during the pandemic. We have observed enough of these issues to confirm a trend, and we will continue to closely monitor how compensation votes play out through the rest of the French AGM season.
Thanks, Cyril. Carla, back to you now for any other notable developments or interesting meetings coming up across Europe.
Yes, Georgina, there are some interesting meetings coming up. In yet another major chapter to the German car manufacturers' emission scandals, the European Commission announced significant fines in the summer of 2021 against Mercedes-Benz, BMW, and Volkswagen for colluding to avoid using available technology to produce better emissions than legally required. Mercedes-Benz escaped fines for helping to bring the cartel to light, but Volkswagen and BMW together paid 875 million euros. All three meetings are coming up at the end of April and mid-May and are sure to be ones to watch. Another interesting meeting to watch with an April 28th AGM will be that of German energy giant RWE, where a shareholder proposal was submitted, which would require the company to spin off part of its business, RWE Power AG. This is the first case of the large cap German company explicitly targeting energy transition, although in this case would involve a significant corporate restructuring. This case has been particularly controversial, especially as RWE operates in a heavily regulated industry in which the German government ultimately has the power to veto any plan, particularly if such a plan could undermine the country's ability to ensure its energy needs. This is even more critical in the context of the current Ukraine crisis and possible disruption in Germany's energy imports.
Indeed. And how about in France, Cyril? Are there any other notable trends from season so far?
Oh, yes, Georgina. In last month's webcast, the trend of splitting the roles of chair and CEO in France was mentioned. A continued focus on leadership issues has been highlighted by a shareholder resolution proposed at Danone, whose AGM will be held on April 26. This resolution was submitted by Fitch Trust and is focused on Danone's informal appointment as honorary chairman of a former Danone CEO and chairman, Franck Riboud. Fitch Trust proposes a resolution to formalize the existence of such a position on the board and to clarify the role. This proposal highlights once again the importance of board leadership issues in France.
Thanks, Cyril. Now we'll leave Europe and transition over to Asia, focusing mainly today on the China, Hong Kong, Taiwan and Singapore seasons. And as I mentioned, we're going to end on a quick review of the recently concluded Korea season. Let me welcome Warren Chen, head of our Asia ex-Japan research, into the conversation. Warren, welcome. And can you remind our listeners of the main proxy season schedules in Asia and the ongoing impact of COVID on shareholder meetings?
Sure. Thank you, Georgina. So the China proxy season is quite lengthy. It is already in full swing now, and we will not see the finish line until around the third week of June. And during this 2.5 month period, the team is expected to publish around 2,200 reports. At this point, it is not clear on how the latest COVID outbreak in Shanghai and the lockdown in that city will impact the AGM schedule. In terms of meeting format, we expect hybrid meetings to continue to be the default format in China. Similarly for Hong Kong, the season is quite lengthy as well. We are seeing a significant ramp up now, and the volume will wind down around middle of June. The recent COVID outbreak in Hong Kong, did not prompt the government to give any filing or meeting extensions to the companies. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the Taiwan proxy season is quite compact. It is mainly concentrated during the four-week period beginning around the last week of May. And the Singapore proxy season is also already in full swing, but because of the relatively small size of the market, most of the workload for the team will be concentrated in a two-week period, with most meeting dates in April. Now, both Taiwan and Singapore, at least for now, have the pandemic under control, so it is not expected to have any impact to the proxy season schedules. Format-wise, we expect to continue to see a mixture of hybrid formats and virtual-only formats in these two markets.
And what about in terms of regulatory developments? What changes are you seeing that may impact at least this upcoming season for those markets?
Yeah, so in Hong Kong, the new regulations regarding long-tenured independent directors became effective starting this year. The provision requires improved disclosure whenever independent directors who have served more than 9 years are up for re-election. In Singapore, the two-tier voting system for independent directors serving more than 9 years also became effective starting this year. Long-tenured independent directors who are not subjected to such voting system will no longer be considered independent. In China, driven by the central government's initiative to address societal inequality, a change in regulation added charitable contributions to the list of matters that are within the board's scope of authority. And because of the change, a number of companies have started amending their articles of incorporation to reflect this change. And lastly, in Taiwan, the requirement for companies with paid-in capital above a certain size to appoint a chief corporate governance officer has now been made compulsory for all listed companies. And although the deadline for compliance is June 30th next year, 2023, we expect to see some companies to appoint a chief corporate governance officer this year, well advanced of the deadline.
Thanks for those insights and pointers. And finally, we're going to take a look back at career proxy season, which has just recently finished. Warren, we typically see an extreme concentration of meetings and of controversial agendas in career season. Let's open our conversation with any impacts that you've seen on the 2022 career season of the pandemic and move on from there.
Yeah, okay. So similar to the 2021 season, the pandemic had minimal impact, both in terms of meeting format and the meeting concentration this year. Only a few larger companies held hybrid meetings. Otherwise, all other AGMs were physical-only meetings. And on the meeting concentration front, despite the government's effort to ease the concentration of meetings with numerous changes over the past few years, including amending the relevant regulations, it had very little impact on this front. So for the 2022 season, the Korea Research Team published over 1,700 reports during a three-week period. And on the busiest day, the team published 350 reports.
Yeah, those numbers are pretty incredible. You mentioned regulatory changes, and were there any other meaningful changes impacting the season?
Yeah, well, so we actually did not see any new regulatory changes, partly due to the presidential election held in the beginning of March this year. But we are closely monitoring how the new president and the changes in the ruling party may impact the general corporate governance dynamics in Korea. With that said, though, we did see regulatory changes from last year prior to the presidential election impacting the 2022 season. A good example was on the board gender diversity regulation. As our audience might be aware, a two-year grace period was put in place on the requirement for having at least one female director on the board of all large companies. Now, that grace period will come to an end by August this year. A few large companies had a head start on adding a female director to their boards last year, but we saw more companies rushing to fulfill this requirement in the 2022 season. Among 120 large companies with asset size greater than 2 trillion Korean won, 43% of all new outside director candidates were female, and the majority of which came from the academic or legal backgrounds.
Yeah, it's certainly good to hear that gender diversity is moving in the right direction in Korea. Were there any other noteworthy trends that you and the team saw?
Yes, another topic worth mentioning is that the role of minority shareholders is becoming more visible at Korean companies as these shareholders are increasingly active and vocal on what they characterize as, you know, dubious actions taken by companies. So for example, you know, questionable succession plans, poor risk oversight, or questionable transactions. The most typical actions taken are in the form of vote no campaigns and the shareholder proposals. Now, historically, passive position taken by minority shareholders in this market is likely rooted in the unique nature of family-owned conglomerates and a long history of silent alliance between the government and the business community. Now, I'll take some time for these movements to translate into vote results, but there certainly is an encouraging sign for the corporate governance landscape in Korea.
And can you highlight some key events in the on minority shareholder actions and overall activism, levels of activism?
Yeah, so under our coverage universe for Korea, 27 companies received shareholder proposals, which is similar to last year's number at 28. But the number of shareholder proposals actually decreased to 83 from the previous years of 127. While the absolute number of proposals decreased this year, the activities from both foreign and domestic activist funds gained a lot of attention. These meetings include SM Entertainment, SK Chemical, Hansom, and Hanjin Cal. There were also Vote No campaigns launched and proposals submitted by individual shareholders at meetings like Kumo Petrochemical and Helix Smith. The most common type of shareholder proposals were related to agenda items such as election of directors, election of audit committee members, and the appointment of internal auditors, followed by amendments to the Articles of Incorporation, income allocation, and director compensations. Even though generally minority shareholders are more vocal, but this actually did not necessarily translate into a substantial number of wins, as you know, in general, most shareholders continue to vote in line with the management. But the Korea National Pension Service and many foreign institutional investors kept up the pressure by continuing to engage with companies and cast opposition votes on controversial directors who were up for election in the season. Some of the meetings where this happened were KT Corp, Shinhan Financial Group, Hana Financial Group, Samsung Electronics, and Samsung Biologics. Interestingly, in the case of KT Corp, the board actually decided to withdraw a controversial director nominee on the day of the meeting as the tension and external pressure grew.
Thank you, Warren. And that ends our April AGM season update podcast. Thanks to our speakers, and thanks most of all to you, our clients, for listening. We hope you find this podcast useful and informative. We'll be back with more proxy season bulletin insights, both podcasts and written notes over the coming weeks. Please do watch your emails over the course of those coming weeks for full information on and links to this season in insight series. From all of us at ISS, thanks again for joining, and please stay safe and secure. Goodbye.